and it's sort of like this unutilized medium, but it's so easy. And you can get the shit down at the deli, you know? You can go there and you can buy eggs.
Do you have eggs in your fridge at the moment?
I do have eggs, yes.
And how do your paintings smell?
They smell a little eggy sometimes, especially the larger work, but... you know, I address that, you know, I mean, I have this, like, lavender oil that I spray on the back of them, so it has this sort of, like, it's got a fragrance to it.
Today on Open House, recap from our studio visit with the one and only Nick Schutzenhofer, a Brooklyn-based painter, working primarily in egg tempera. This was by far the most extensive painting practice we have seen to date in New York. I mean, we're talking piles of paintings. I can almost guarantee this guy is in the studio more than you. Debbie and I got a chance to sit down with Nick and learn a little bit about the process of egg tempera. We learned about his influences, including, but not limited to, the obscure 20th century illustrator Alfred Kubin. He also talked about the effects of grad school on his painting practice and how that cracked open a new aesthetic for him. We truly were blown away by the surface quality of these paintings, and if you're listening to this, you should get out and see them in real life. And that intro track you heard is called The Method by a legendary band. They're called Noise Toys, based out of Bellingham. They're since no more, but you can find their music at noisetoysmusic.bandcamp.com. So here you have it, unscripted, unrehearsed, off the cuff, from the studio in South Slope, Brooklyn, Nick Schutzenhofer on Open House.
Yeah. My brain is like... This would be a great, like, show installation.
Just, like, stacked
just
up.
A pile of paintings, right, yeah. Right. That'd be a way to...
This way one, to hold on, I can't decide what to do. Stable?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, hold on, there's one that I really like. Oh, yeah, this one is weird. This weird one.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Do you like make them sometimes and be like, oh yeah, the weird one?
This is like the glossy. Like,
I know, it's got this like gross surface on it.
Sometimes it's the best one of the first time.
This
like,
is so weird.
It nasty? It's just kind of fucked
up. What is it?
It's just oil.
It's oil.
And there's a rabbit, there's a egg tempera paint underneath.
Ah, okay. So,
the oil doesn't absorb in, and it's a lot of stained oil, so it's like really like rubbery or something.
So it, but it's dry.
Yeah.
That smell like came out of that when you moved it.
I know, right? It's got like an odor. Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
I'm a little overwhelmed by how many good paintings there are around me.
Yeah.
Sweet of you.
I guess we'll, I guess we'll start by saying, we're here. In South Slope.
Mm-hmm.
In Nick Schutzenhofer's studio. And we've got a nice assortment of new paintings in front of us.
Who are we?
I'm Till.
And I'm Debbie.
And Nick's here.
I'm here.
We are.
He's here.
We are going through the lens of Open House.
Yes.
Yes. So, I guess we'll start... I kind of like to start by finding out a little bit about like how you got into art making, where you grew up, you know, like when you started.
Yeah. Let's see. I was born in Missouri, in a small town called St. Joseph, whose really only reason that it might be well known is that. Was the start of the Pony Express, and it was also where Jesse James was killed, the famous cowboy. And I lived there until I was about five, and it was really rural. And then my family moved to a western suburb of Chicago called Naperville, which is about 40 minutes outside the city. And I... Basically, as a little kid, I was either outside, like, building forts and going fishing, or I was, like, at my desk making these tiny little intricate drawings of airplane fights and, like, battleships and, like...
That's amazing.
That sounds like an ideal childhood.
That's, like...
Right.
Actually, the first drawings I made were like, airplane battle scenes.
Yeah, they're really weird. My mom gave them to all of them to me recently, and, like,
oh, wow.
they're strangely, like, the space in them, it's, like, topographical almost. It's like they're, things are flying at you, but the action is taking place across the flat surface. They're really weird.
I'd like to see those sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that I have some of those drawings somewhere in a box, and I'm curious to see how they compare to the ones I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think you, like, think about those child drawings while you're making these? Ever?
Maybe in some ways. I mean, because there is this sort of, like, I mean, a lot of my work's still on paper, right? It's still, mm-hmm. like, lots of small mark making.
Yeah.
And there's this sensation of things being, like, a kind of all-over composition and sort of flat, but at the same time this sort of, like, indication of deep space. And I think, you know, a lot of the things I did in those childhood drawings have that similar quality where there's this sort of, like, they feel like a topographical, they feel like a map almost in the way that a map would be laid flat and viewed from above. And it, a lot of it came from how I was working on them because I was, like, hunched over them at a desk, but, like, they had this space as well that you could go into. I don't think about those drawings in particular, but I think a lot of the things that I think about in terms of, like, how a picture is structured might still apply in some ways. But I was making tons of drawings as a kid. My mom was, she painted for some time whenever she was younger and would always take me to the Art Institute in Chicago.
Mm.
And I remember having, like, really profound experiences there as a child. My favorite area of the whole museum was, like, and what got me kind of into even the idea of going to a museum, which seems like a really stale place for me as a kid, there was this hall of arms and armor in the Art Institute, which is now it's a long hallway that's now filled with Indian art from, you know, Southeast Asia, and it's like these Ganesh sculptures and stuff like that. But back in the day, it was like swords and knight's armor and, like, all of this crazy, you know, sort of like little boy stuff.
Yeah.
So me making these sort of, like, kind of violent battle drawings, I was super into going there and seeing that stuff. And then, you know, by proximity, you happen to wander into these other galleries in the museum and see, you know, paintings and, you know, I was always really into this, there's a Giovanni de Paola, a painting of the beheading of Saint...
It's a great painting.
Saint John,
yeah.
Right? You know that one?
Yeah.
And it's in three panels.
Yeah.
And it's super violent, like this is crazy blood spraying out of this guy's neck hole after he gets his head cut
it's
off.
A great painting.
And I remember seeing that and, like, being super into it. And, you know, fast forward many, many years, I took a bunch of art classes in high school and, you know, got to go to the Contemporary Art Museum and see, like, Cindy Sherman and got really into photography and ended up studying art history in college and minoring in photography. And sort of my first works that I was making were photo-based, outside of, like, the drawings that I kept making. Like, I've always had kind of a drawing practice and kept a... sketchbook and made just drawings of stuff. Was really into photography and making, I remember my sort of show culminating my undergrad experience. I was taking photos of paintings out of books, like paintings that I really liked, and then I would collage them together in the darkroom and make a kind of like 8x10 image that would be like a combination of Francis Bacon and Titian or something like that, and like weird kind of like from different times and different
remix
totally mixing it up and making my own kinds of compositions. And then I would scan those. I would high-res scan those and have them. I buy these really nice. It's called like a Lambda print or something like that, and they're like these high-resolution prints, and I would print them out kind of like semi-large for a photo. And those were really like the first works that I was making, and kind of like thinking about like Sherry Levine was my favorite artist at that time, and her photo mm-hmm. appropriations and how she sort of was, photographing a photograph. And I think that's still something that I think about a lot, and I still love her work. That's how I got started. I mean, it was just sort of like any person, I think, that has a sort of inclination to make drawings and does it kind of like compulsively and then mm-hmm. gets interested in the other areas of what an artist does.
So do you consider yourself a painter?
That's a good question. I guess I do now, maybe. Yeah, sure. I don't not consider myself a painter. I mean, I consider myself a... Yeah, I guess painter would be the easiest way to say it. I think more about images than I do necessarily about paintings, but I think painting is the way that I get there now.
How did you get into egg tempera? And so it sounds like you started with this photo collage thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, like how did you transition into making paintings?
And can you walk us through the process a little bit?
Sure.
How it all works?
I was making drawings on paper and just ink for like many, many years, and I had like a show at this artist-run space in Chicago, and I made these big drawings. There's like a lot of small mark making in them. And I don't know. I mean, I guess I, made a whole bunch of work in that sort of vein of just kind of drawing, because I lost the facilities of having the photo darkroom in college, right? So I was looking for a way to sort of work with the same ideas that I had been working with. And so I was like, well, fuck it, I can just, instead of taking pictures of this stuff and then using a darkroom, I can just draw it, right? And it'll mm-hmm. be the same, sort of, and maybe even a little bit better. And so I started making drawings, appropriating imagery from various sources and kind of combining it together. And I made this whole series of work, and it was really kind of like labor-intensive, and I applied to graduate school with it, and didn't get into the school that I wanted to go to, and so I felt like I had to like kind of change my work, and like I thought since I was applying to a painting department, like maybe I need to start making paintings. And so I'd never taken a painting class, and so I started, just sort of like slowly accumulating the materials, and sort of like, I bought this like materials and methods book by Ralph Mayer, right, you guys, it's like this sort of classic textbook, and there's a whole chapter in there on egg tempera, and there's a chapter on oil painting and like all of the sort of mediums and stuff like that. And I started actually with oil paint, and I got frustrated so fast because like I'm kind of impatient, and one of the things that I loved about drawing and like drawing just an ink on paper was like the speed at which you could work, right? Mm-hmm. You can make a mark or make a bunch of marks and it dries in like 10 minutes. Oil painting's so much slower. And so, experimented with oil painting, applied to grad school like another time, didn't get in again. And finally, I was still making paintings and still sort of like troubleshooting. Finally, I get into the school I wanted to go to, and I took this materials class at the Art Institute in Chicago. And it's basically like they teach you like how to actually use the mediums and stuff like that, but one of the things that they show you like how to paint with gouache and distemper and what's that fucking milk paint called?
It's called milk paint.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, there might be a fancier name.
I can never remember the fancier name. But they also showed us egg tempera, and there was something about it that I really liked, and I think it was like the transparency of the paint that you could get and also the speed at which it dries, right? I mean, you can make a mark and it's literally drying as you make the mark. So you can work really quickly, and I like that sort of feeling, and I like the way that it looks like you can make it look like marker, right? It feels almost backlit whenever you paint with it on a really bright white surface, and I like that kind of like the light that it has, or the way that it holds light is really interesting, or the way that, you know, the paper can, you can make it so transparent because it's water-based, essentially, that it feels, it feels backlit. It feels like marker. I mean, it's super transparent and kind of lovely, and I mean, it's bright, and it, you know, had the speed. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess my first experiences with it were in a classroom as a graduate student, and then I kind of put it on the back burner for a year or two, and then really started working with it in a serious way in sort of my second year of graduate school. I was making, like, really, really minimal, kind of, like, really different work than what we're looking at right now. Mm. And then I got super frustrated with that way of working. I was like, it's kind of funny because I was making like these big paintings that were just like big pieces of paper glued on the canvas. Mm-hmm. And that would be it. It would just be like white paper on canvas. And it was like, there was like nothing, right?
Right.
And I got sick of actually having to like justify my decisions to not have anything there,
yeah.
You know, like this sort of like hollow, like I needed to have this like really intellectual kind of like discussion about like why I didn't have anything on the surface, right? Mm-hmm. Like why mm-hmm. was it just a surface? Why was it totally empty? And I got kind of frustrated with not being able to, I guess maybe I wanted to make the kind of work that I am now, but like in a academic setting, it felt like I didn't have permission or something like mm-hmm. that. I felt like I had to make the slick looking, empty kind of minimalist work, and then it was basically out of frustration I started like making these super bright, colorful egg tempera paintings in my second year, and it felt really good, and I didn't give a shit like what people thought about them. I was just sort of like, this feels right.
That brings up an interesting question. Do you think that the grad school setting, you know, brings out this kind of challenge to feel like you need to fit what's going on or something?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it was trying to make my work look like what I was seeing on Contemporary Art Daily or something
like that.
Yeah. And feeling like I wanted to have an aesthetic that could be viable or something like that. Or like, mm-hmm. I felt like I was trying to make something that could fit into a gallery at that moment, you know, instead of thinking about like what I actually had a desire to make and what would make me happy, you know, as a painter.
So how did you come upon like the imagery that you use now? Like,
oh,
it's like there's like some
like
serpents and like maybe forests. And
yeah, I mean, a lot of it is still appropriated from other sources. Mm-hmm. I've been working, I mean, since about 2014, I've been there's this printmaker, Alfred Kuben, who is you know his stuff?
Oh,
okay, yeah. And I've been using his stuff as source material for, God, the past 3 years, maybe. He wrote this novel called The Other Side,
mm-hmm.
And he illustrated it as well. He wrote it in 1913, and it's this sort of, like, dystopian examination of the rise of fascism, more or less.
It's definitely relevant at the moment.
Totally. And I mean, I wasn't even thinking about that back. This was in 2014, so Obama was still, you know, president, and like we were in a good situation politically.
Better situation
politically. But yeah, I mean, I've used a lot of his stuff in my work, and like a lot of Kuben's work, and like I think a lot of the you know, seemingly more tangential, kind of like what feels like abstraction is still related very directly to his work and to sort of like work of that time period as well. I mean, I feel like some of them are so direct, like the painting right there in the middle is a very direct appropriation of imagery from this piece he did called The Descending Line, which is it's a family portrait, essentially, of him being the one sort of at the bottom of that stack of beings, and then the snake figure is his dad, and then the woman is obviously his mother.
So egg tempera feels like this sort of traditional medium that I would associate with realist painting,
spiritual,
and even like
religion.
Sacred painting of of the 1600s or something. Do you think about the historical context of egg tempera as a medium when you're approaching?
Sure. Yeah. Totally. Painting? I mean, I don't think it's like the. I guess all painting for me either falls into, it's either spiritual or it's ironic, right? I mean, so I would definitely put mine more in the camp of spiritual than irony. I never really thought about irony as like a sustainable way of making work. I mean, it feels so disingenuous or something like that. but I'm definitely, I'm not a very spiritual person, and I'm, you know, not religious, but I like the, you know, like if you think, take like illuminated manuscripts, for example, the way that a lot of the space is structured in the images in those is pretty crazy, and the kind of invention that people used when making that kind of work is pretty phenomenal, and I guess I come to art making as a more of a like a person who's interested in history and as a viewer, right? Like, I mean, I studied art history as an undergrad. It's still something that is kind of parallel to my own work, is like my the sort of research that I do, visual research, or like I wouldn't use the word scholarly, but you know, like reading that I do about history or about other artists and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, I like the kind of, the weight that it has, I guess, as a medium, and that it has this connection to this really old way of making images. But, I mean, it was, for me, it was super practical also. I mean, it dries really, really fast. You can work fast. You know, I got, like, this sort of kick out of, like, how you can manipulate color and layer these sort of transparencies, and it, you know, it's just sort of beautiful and has a kind of like different feeling than most other kinds of paint. And also, like, if you Google egg tempera painting, you get like the worst kind of craft project bullshit back. You know? I mean, it sort of has this sort of crafty kind of like, it's not a very elevated thing, unless you're looking at it in this sort of like really historical context. And contemporary society, you know, like nobody really uses it, you know. I mean, it's sort of like this unutilized medium, but it's so easy, and you can get the shit down at the deli, you know. You can go there,
so,
and you can buy eggs.
Do you have eggs in your fridge at the moment?
I do have eggs, yes.
And how do your paintings smell?
They smell a little eggy sometimes, especially the larger work, but you know, I address that, you know. I mean, I have this like lavender oil that I spray on the back of them, so it has this sort of like, it's got a fragrance too. It's a totally
so there's a trick
experience
for like eliminating the egg odor.
Well, and the egg odor is only while it's curing too, and it you know, a painting, you know, the, like this. I mean, it might take 6 months for it to cure fully. I mean, but you're not going to have much of an egg smell after like a week or two.
Oh, okay,
I mean,
got it. Yeah.
It's not so bad. I mean, I remember in I was in LA last year, and like it's a lot hotter there, obviously. And I had AC in my studio, but I was making like several large paintings at once, and all on the floor. And I remember walking in there sometimes, and it's like it smells like sulfur or something. It's like, you gag you. Yeah.
Well, I think that's really a radical thing to that you're doing, and I was really surprised when you first told me that you work in egg tempera, because I was like, I don't know anybody who does that, you know? Mm. And especially at this scale. So that got me really interested. I want to, like, shift gears a little bit maybe towards some of your most recent work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe ask you a little bit about... it sort of seems to be referencing, or it's reminding me of op art or drawing from Aboriginal painting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally.
Australia.
Yeah.
Like, are you thinking about that? Are you feeling like you're referencing that? And,
because
they definitely vibrate. Like, they have this thing where
really
you look at them and there's this layering where you get this hot under-painted color.
Right.
And then it's contrasting against this dull sort of color that really that really like creates this vibration. And
I mean, my mom's from Australia, so I've looked at a ton of indigenous art from there. I was just there last September for about 2 weeks and just saw these amazing kind of like collections of that kind of work, and I've always loved the kind of like that work is so loose, you know, and so yeah, the mark making's tremendous, and there's not a lot of... It's very unpretentious in a lot of ways. I don't think I'm directly referencing any of that stuff. I feel like even the work that is more visually kind of what a person might call an abstract painting, like, I always think of myself as making a picture of an abstract painting and not making an abstract painting per se, because I'm not really, like, abstracting from a thing. I already have an idea in mind about like what the image is gonna be. So I mean, there's not really like abstracting that's happening, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's sort of I'm making a I mean, I always just think about them as like an image of an abstract painting.
So like this one on the right that we're looking at, it sort of has like the longer green lines on top, and then it looks like maybe the shorter green lines atop of Hanse yellow, like really bright yellow.
Yeah.
That painting, what painting, you know, are you making a painting of? Or picture are you making
a painting of? I guess it's kind of a mix of, like, Daniel Buren and, I don't know who else, maybe Lichtenstein or something. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily a direct reference in these. They're more just sort of, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I those are really new. I mean, I haven't even really, like, digested those yet. I mean, in some ways...
We can take this question out.
No, you don't have to. No, you leave it all in. It's fine. I mean, I think, I think there's... I don't have to know everything about my work right away. That's totally
nobody does.
Fine. I mean, I guess some of them, you know, some of these I've been trying to think of a way to kind of like build a body of work that uses something more representational like that, and that's a direct appropriation with something that can be more visually abstract and maybe have them support each other, right? I mean, the colors are not so far off from one another. The surface is the same, so a lot of the marks are the same kinds of marks, the transparency's there. Okay, so like I'm always trying to think of like how I would put together a show, right? And so, you know, a lot of what I've been thinking about is sort of building a painting show like a person would build a set for theater, right? So you have things that are kind of like driving a narrative in some ways, and then you have elements that are sort of like not necessarily props, but they're kind of like functioning like a scenic backdrop, or you know, they're sort of as important as a character on the stage, but they might be something that's like structural.
Yeah.
Right.
And so trying to figure out a way to make them work in tandem and have them support each other. I mean, another way that I think about it is in terms of like sound, right? Or like music. Mm-hmm. You know, you have, I've used this example before, but like a barbershop quartet, right? Like in order for a barbershop quartet to sound the way it does, you've got the dude with the deep ass voice, you've got like your soprano, and you've got everything in between, and they only sound that way whenever they're all harmonizing together. And I think about painting that way. Like, how do I make a group of paintings and not like a singular painting that's supporting like an idea across images? Because I think about painting in terms of how one painting sits next to each other, because no right. painting is in a vacuum, you know?
Right.
I mean, they're all with each other. I mean, it's a trajectory of like all of these people working over all these years and all these different styles. And I mean, I think about that, and maybe it's the way that I look at work now and absorb work now, is more in this sort of like flattened out way, where there's not like mm-hmm. a hierarchy of representation or where you can have these sort of different elements that go together, even if they're like clashing in some mm-hmm. ways, and they can kind of inform each other.
I have a question.
Yes.
From that point, we only have time for a couple more questions.
Okay.
But so it sounds like you definitely have like a way of working, and you have like some imagery and like research that you've been working from for a while.
Mm.
And you have like this idea of how you look at a show and a body of work and how they all come together. How do you deal with your day-to-day like experiences of just like being a human and emotions, and does that like show up in the work at all, or is it like the work more of a retreat from that to kind of go into your own world to escape?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I think there's definitely things that come or that go into the work that might be more from, you know, like something going on in my personal life, but then at the same time, like, it's always been kind of a retreat for me, and mm-hmm. and sort of like, you know, just sort of like zoning out and making something and mm-hmm. not, and just like being absorbed in the process. I mean, I think is super cathartic for me as mm-hmm. a person. And I mean, I love the solitude of it too. I mean, you know, I have a studio mate that I never see. And so like, I totally value my time in here, you know, just being with my ideas and being with like the materials and stuff like that. But you know, it's hard to keep your own personal life out of your work. I mean, it all comes, you know, you're making decisions based on your experiences as a person, so all of that is going to inflect your choices somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think a lot of the choices that I make in my work are definitely coming from these personal places, as even though it has this sort of overarching structure, I mean, that structure is changing all the time. And it's from, my experiences as a human.
I think that's a great answer. If Till doesn't have any burning questions, I love that painting over there.
Oh.
And I heard you say earlier that you love it too.
Yes.
But to me, it is a lot different in the sense that, I mean,
this
I know
is
it,
the teal and purple, like, squares that sort of taper
and I know
into thinner squares in the middle.
It has some language in common with the newest work
right.
that you've been showing us,
sure.
which are the lines with the green over the pink and the dots and the bright ones over here. But that one came before these, right?
It did. That was the first painting I made in New York. And then...
That's a hot ticket item.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Tell us about that painting a little bit.
It's really funny because like there's a painting underneath it. If you look at it closely, there's all these marks underneath that grid structure.
Yeah.
And it was this painting that's in the middle here. It was a version of that. Because I've made that painting. I've made several versions of that painting.
That's the three-tiered family one.
Yep. And I painted over it because I was like, man, I'm in a new place. I need to, I should do something different. And I just wasn't happy with I felt like I needed to like expand a little bit. And so I made this painting, and I was like, oh, this looks like several paintings that I've made before. I'm going to paint this grid structure over it. And
but it's like almost not a grid. Happens. It's so like
It's super wonky. It's like transparent. You can see all the activity behind it. So there's like a buried image in there. And, you know, I mean, I think that actually informed a lot of the other work that I've made since I've been here, which is this sort of idea of this like multi-layered picture that you know, you sort of result in a multi-layered picture, and maybe there's buried imagery in stuff. I mean, these ones with the dot matrices over these kind of like colorful grids and stripes and stuff like that, there's like paintings of the lines that you see, like the dark lines, are like paintings of flowers and shit. I mean, it's like and yeah, I mean, I guess I was thinking about how could I do something with these sort of like more opaque colors that's similar to what I do with tempera, which is layering, right? And so it became not about like this sort of different way of layering and in this sort of more, I don't know, kind of like broken up, kind of like pixelated almost way. And I think that painting, the purple and teal grid one, was sort of a stepping stone to getting to the newer work, but I mean, it's something that I'm gonna come back to for sure, just because, like, yeah, it was satisfying making it, and it's satisfying, like, covering up a painting, too, in some ways.
Especially when it's flat like that, that's easy.
Right? Yeah, totally.
So this artist that you're referencing...
Alfred Kuban. Yeah.
So, he came along during the rise of fascism, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Do you see a relation with that imagery to, like, because what I'm seeing with these dot paintings or grid painting that you've talking about over an underpainting as like this sort of idea of a filter of information.
Sure.
And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think that it can relate maybe to like the way that we are receiving information.
Totally. Today. Yeah, like, yeah. And you have to kind of pull through it. You know, you got to kind of like look through this scrim to like get to something that's behind, you know, this sort of information that's on top, which isn't necessarily the whole picture, right?
Right.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good, you're totally accurate, you know, in that kind of read.
Is there a thought with using Kuban, or do you like the way that his images read and how kind of the weirdness of
I like the problem his a lot of his imagery is super problematic in so many ways, and it was so personal, and you know, he was one of these people that had a career as an illustrator for like books, and like he made all of this work that was just for him, and you know, he was fairly well respected, you know, man in his time as an artist, but like his career was in pretty much like an illustration.
Basically, I mean, I don't know, I'm just like trying to see if there's sort of a using him specifically like for political context.
Oh, you know, I mean,
and how that relates maybe to the dots that are coming into play, or you know, this filter that you're creating by layering.
I mean, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I feel like it's kind of like I started using his work before. I mean, I don't really necessarily have an interest in making like very like politically charged work. I mean, I think my impulse comes from a different kind of place.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of happenstance that like some of his work and his writing is more feels more like relevant now. But I mean, I definitely see a connection between the two bodies of work. I mean, there's and I mean, I've read his book that he wrote, I don't know, 4 or 5 times at this point, and there has to be, I still think about that his work whenever I'm making these ones with the dots on it, but maybe they're more like scenery or setting that he's in, you know, and not necessarily the more narrative elements of, you know, the sort of imagery that he creates to illustrate the scenes in his book. Like, I think about them more as like a backdrop or something like that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Cool.
I think it's about time to wrap up. But yeah. I wanted to squeeze in two really short questions.
Do it.
If I can be greedy. The first one is the colors.
Yeah.
Are they just from your like pure soul aesthetic of genius? Or do they come from a special place? And secondly, how many drawings like do you make? Because I know that these are drawings mounted, or they're paper mounted that you paint on.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I see a couple of studies over there. So like,
yeah.
Does that mix in with how you pick colors too? Or
yeah, a lot of the I do a lot of like color studies on paper, you know, before or as I'm making a painting. I think the colors themselves, I mean, I think a lot about how, like, I love purple, right? And it's because it has such a complex color space. It's both warm and cool at the same time. Mm.
I love it. It,
depending on what color you put it next to, it can come forward or recede in space. And so, I mean, I kind of just love purple. I think it's a really awkward color. And then some of the other, you know, colors that I choose, I mean, I just try and challenge my own taste, right? So I tend to go towards palettes that of stuff that like I wouldn't like wear, you know. So like I never wear purple ever. You'll never see me wear anything purple.
These paintings are not a reflection of you.
No, certainly not. I mean, I think that's something that I try and like push myself to use colors that aren't necessarily conventionally beautiful, right? I mean, I use a lot of like this weird rusty red, like weird pinks, weird greens, ochres, earth, you know, these kind of like earth colors. You know, some of them are, all of Kubin's work was black and white, right? And so I get to invent a lot of it. And, you know, the ones that are more direct appropriations of his work that are related to his writing, I'm inventing a lot of the color palette choices based on the mood of the particular passage that the imagery was taken from. And the, you know, luckily that the novel that he wrote, it's sort of like a precursor to a lot of surrealist writing, and like it's very vivid imagery that he describes. And you know, there's all sorts of language that uses color within that. And so I'll use that sometimes. I mean, sometimes it's just sort of like, I guess, coming up with a palette that like challenges my taste, but still is visually appealing in some ways, but also that does things with space, you know, color space, and kind of has this similar sort of atmospheric quality that I, you know, that I dig.
I dig it too.
Okay, cool.
Purple, man.
Purple.
It's the shit.
Yeah, I love it. Isn't it great?
It's really great.
Yeah.
Well, this has been absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming by.
Sharing your.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks for thanks for having us.
Yeah. And, my pleasure.
You got anything coming up on the horizon?
Oh God, nothing in ink on the calendar. Yeah, just trying to do a lot of studio visits and hopefully, you know, getting something pinned down soon. So yeah, I just had a thing a couple weeks ago. It was a small group show that opened last Friday? Friday before last? Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was some really great artists in that. Candace Williams, this guy Dapper Bruce Lafitte. His greatest name ever.
Dapper Bruce.
And Nicholas Plank was in it. He's really great.
Yeah, you heard it first. He's available.
I'm available. I'm here.
Gallerist.
Come on.
Beware.
Yep. Take all comers.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. Yep.
I love it. it.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, thanks again.
Yeah, and, my pleasure.
Again, this is Open House. Debbie Kino and myself, Tillwell, and we're here with Nick Schutzenhofer in lovely South Slope, Brooklyn. That's a wrap.
This has been a production of Open House. Myself, Till Will, Debbie Keynote, Julia Gray, and supporting staff writers. Open House began as a living room gallery in beautiful Bellingham, Washington. It has since transplanted to Brooklyn, New York, where we try to keep up with the latest emerging art happenings and transmit them to you. Please, if you like what you hear, send submissions to info@openhouseblog.nyc. We accept submissions of all kinds. Find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, the internet in general, openhouseblog.nyc. And most importantly, have fun, stay safe, and keep making.